presented by the UK Higher Education Academy for sustained support for enhancing student experiences at the university. She's also got a strong background in research for student satisfaction and how to increase value and decrease dissatisfaction. We're delighted to have her as our host, and we want to make sure that she feels very welcome here today. So thank you very much.
There's only three chairs there, and this is because they thought if I stood up, I might grow taller. So we'll eventually be here for the day. It's my pleasure to chair this expert panel this year. And let me introduce my fellow panelists. Terry Lynn Brown, would you come up to sit on the stage, please? Terry Lynn is a distributed learning consultant and project manager with the Calgary Board of Education. Please welcome Terry Lynn. Is the Associate Vice Chancellor and Deputy Chief Information Officer at the Institute, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Welcome. Stephen Dallas, with put your beautiful photograph up. Stephen is the Senior Researcher with the Learning and Collaborative Technologies Group. Please welcome Stephen. Now, the topic for today is that we only exist because of the needs of students. I will change that slightly and say we only exist because there are students. But we do exist to help them. And what do we know about them? Do we know what they need? Do we know what they want? Do we know what the challenges they're facing? Do we know how do we provide to answer the needs of those students? And what are the solutions? So that's what this expert panel session is all about. But before I give my views on this topic, because they've given me the opportunity to make some introductory comments, I'd like to review the format for the session this afternoon. We're using Ustream to webcast the session for Desire to Learn clients, educators, maybe my husband, hi Barry, and maybe some Chris recorders who are lurking out there. But we're being streamed around the world, and your virtual participation will be welcomed and invited at the appropriate stage. We've got the chat channels and the text comments, and people in the room can be texting as well as those who are participating virtually. But we'll only address questions that are relevant to the topic. I'm not implying that my last questions are irrelevant, but we're not answering those. And after we've heard from each of the presenters, we'll have a question and answer session. And I will be hosting taking the questions from both the room and from the map channel. And the URL of the room is thus. I don't have to read that out, we've got it there. So, with that bit of background, let's begin. And I have the pleasure of being the first to share my views with you about the needs of students. Oh, that's me. Which students? As you can see from that slide, you can cut and dice the student population in your colleges, schools, universities, in a variety of ways. I'm not going to read them all out. But clearly, one size doesn't fit all when it comes to talking about the needs of our students. So we've got to adopt a more marketing focus and think about the particular needs of the students that we're targeting with our research. Is each segment as important as the other? Only you can answer that. But in a pragmatic sense, we can't actually do everything for everybody and get down to the nuts and bolts and understand everything for every student cohort. As you saw at the beginning, there are many, many cohorts. And so we've got two clever ways of getting information. And can we use information research that's done, say, at the French University, and use that at the Defence Force Academy in Canada, perhaps? But There's another problem when we look at the needs of students. We're already addressing which students, but at which stage of the learning and the engagement are we targeting? Before they start? When they start? When they're learning? Are we trying to get them in the K-12 level? When they're at university? As you can see, there are going to be some pragmatic decisions required as to what we're going to be able to achieve. And do we rely on our own assumptions? You know, we're all experts. Or do we ask them? I won't embarrass anybody by asking the audience about, you know, do you say, well, I know what my students mean? Because I would say, perhaps you don't. Now, there's two sides like this. Unnamed University Library Service, nothing to do with e-learning, and I have done research in a number of libraries, so you can't pick this one on any particular institution. But the observer bar, the white bar, is the staff of that library voting in a workshop with the students how they think the students are going to do it. There's high agreement on the first one, but from there, the level of assumptions that are being made are being challenged highly by the customers themselves. In other words, the staff don't know what the customers are looking for. And if we look at that particular chart, the disjunction between what the staff thought and what the students actually said is well pronounced. And that's very sobering, because don't please make the assumptions that you know what the students want. So, do we do research? Do we do external? Do we rely on external research? Do we look and measure? I think Alice probably going to talk about looking. Or do we provide confirmation to patients? And the challenge is to identify which target sector are we going to focus on, because you really can't do everything. It would take too much time. It would be too costly. And if you're going to embark upon a serious engagement with your customers about what they need, they're going to have an expectation that you're going to do something as a response to that feedback. So don't go and ask them if you're not going to do anything. And of course, it was technology. Can we do it some other way? Can we get technology to do it for us? And are there things that are coming on the horizon, perhaps with Design to Learn, that will help us understand where our students are at so that we can actually help them? So, our panelists are going to be addressing the challenges here about who, what, how, when, and why, and try to identify what this practice might look like. And we also want to get your experience as well. We've got three very different presentations from very different backgrounds, and I hope that that stimulates a broad cross-section of thinking about what this challenge really means for us. So, without further ado, I'm going to invite Tim Bing, who is going to be followed by Al, who is going to be followed by Sue. So, please welcome Tim Bing.
Goals are, and how this is going to affect their current needs and their courses. So to truly know what students need, we have to get to know them. Something that we seem to do less of as students get older, but in reality, this is likely when they're more able to articulate what it is that they need. So part of knowing what students need is helping them to identify these needs. What do these students need? I think really what they need is personalization. And by personalization, I'm not referring to welcome care and dialogue and navigation or being able to choose my colors. I'm looking at the ability to affect change and to customize, not customize our environment, but it's something that we don't do to or for our students, but it's instead something that we enable them to do for themselves. So what students need then are the conditions in order for them to personalize their learning. How do we do this? We start by providing options. So we look at allowing students to access multiple resources in multiple formats. The preference to learn to video in one subject area might differ from learning to read in another. Meaning they will demonstrate their learning in a variety of ways rather than being asked to conform. The curriculum needs to adapt to the student and not the other way around. They need the flexibility to learn at their own pace, and they need recognition of prior learning and informal learning. We also want to help them make it matter. So by that I mean they need to help them find meaning in what it is that they're doing, helping them to connect their areas of interest with current objectives, and allowing them to explore objectives through current lenses of interest to make the content more relevant and maintain their motivation. Finally, we need to let them learn together. We create opportunities for collaboration within and beyond the classroom. Feedback is a critical component of learning, but it doesn't necessarily need to come from the teacher. So we need to connect with experts, peers, family members, that add value to that student's voice and help them form connections that help strategies for lifelong learning. Some of the challenges to this. First off, we've out of time. So there's a sense of urgency to address student needs through the personalization of learning. We see students becoming more and more disengaged with learning, and we need to get moving on addressing that agenda. So some of the things I think we need to do. We need to think beyond boxes. One of our issues is our tendency to categorize students. So perhaps we do this in an attempt to simplify the practice of teaching, but we need to think outside the boxes where we sort students by grades, learning styles, generations in which they're born, and not presume that all students in a particular category have the same needs. No single learning theory or label can prescribe what a student needs, and these needs may change over time by subject or even objective. So if we believe that each student has unique learning needs, these generalizations work against any effort to support personalization. We need to think beyond old structures and paradigms, from old organizational structures to the role of the student and teacher. We need to become more flexible and adapt, or even promote change. If the way we've always done it in high school or higher ed isn't helping students to achieve their personal best, we have to be willing to adjust. Thinking differently about what it means to teach, so we become facilitators rather than deliverers of content. And understanding that traditional lectures and assessments may not meet the needs of all students or the accurate representations of their understanding. It also means a new role for students with increased ownership for their learning. We have to question why we accept failure by a certain percentage of students as normal, and instead put student learning at the center of our work as educators, providing not only a one-size-fits-all curriculum, but one shaped around personal learning plans for each student. And finally, the technology. What can be both a challenge and a solution? And the challenge with technology is not to see it as an add-on or something that helps reinforce older practices, but an opportunity to reconsider how student needs can be met through its use. So it can help us provide these options for students, allowing them to personalize their learning, but it can also be misused, forcing our learning preferences on the students. Technology should be used to provide more options, not limit them. And we reached a point where that technology allows us to support personalization, but we have to be the ones to enable that from them. So the experts on what students need, in conclusion, is actually them, and not us up here. We need to be working more with our students and learning what it is that they need and provide curriculum that actually addresses those needs.
Terry, I'm allowed to ask a question.
Terry, have you discovered with the student experiences with things like World of Warcraft that the idea of failure is different now for students today? In the old days, if you passed the exam or you failed the exam, you failed. But are students experiencing failure in a different way now as a learning opportunity?
Certainly see failure as a learning opportunity. We need to get kids that experience where they practice and learn and grow from those experiences as opposed to
Please thank Terry.
Al is our next presenter. Al, please come to the stage. Welcome to Al.
Good afternoon. Okay, so what do students need? Let's start with Rousseau. And one of Rousseau's favorite statements is, man is born free, everywhere he chains. So what do students need? They want to be set free. Our institutions are, from their perception, but you're also a student, I'm a student. These are institutions of incarceration, of control, of torture. So what do students need? They want to be set free. And how do we do that? So I'm going to suggest, I'm going to assert dogmatically with uncommon belief that analytics is the tool. It's the tool of liberation, the tool of freedom. It's going to set students free. It's going to set us free. Why and how? Okay, so I think it's important to talk about metaphors. Analytics has two meanings in my mind. One set of meanings, which are important, a lot of us are doing it, is around business intelligence. You know, we want to measure things, we want to assess things, we want to perform on dashboards, we want reporting, we want reports, we want analysis, and all that sweet stuff. These are very, very hard problems, and we need to make progress on that. I don't really care about that. I mean, I do care about it as an institution. All of us need to make important progress in that area. But that's not analytics in the sense of a tool or a set of tools or a set of infrastructure that students can use as an instrument of liberation. So the metaphor that I'd like to keep in mind is the cockpit metaphor. When we talk about learning, think of the student as a pilot, and he or she needs a set of instruments to let them know where they are, where they want to go, how are they going to get there, and what are the obstacles in my journey. Right? So it's, think of analytics as all the data and the instrumentation that I need on my journey. Okay, so I'm going to skip that for a moment. I'll come back to it. So what we're trying to do at Minnesota State College and Universities is think about analytics from the perspective of the student as what's the instrumentation, what's the data that students will need in their journey. And the primary tool or set of tools that we want to create, and these are not good terms, but for starters, a student navigation system. What's the cockpit and set of instruments that we need to build for the student that's heavily personalized, that can take them in their journey from where they are and where they want to go? At the same time, faculty have a very, very important role. And they also need a set of instruments. I think of faculty as not necessarily the primary drivers in the learning journey, but supporting. So both staff and faculty, you can imagine them as being in air control tower or in the surrounding environment to help the student pilot in their journey. I'm going to describe here just very, very briefly a prototype that we're working on as a faculty instrument. But I'm going to refer you to my blog to just outline, I just posted this morning, a concept called learning environment powered by intelligent analytics. Shorthand LEIA, as in emphasis LEIA, L-E-I-A. And what that about, LEIA is a framework saying, okay, given knowledge about where I am, who I am, what situation and environment I'm in, and who I'm with, the social network, the faculty, mentor resources, using those as four input vectors, is there an analytic engine that we can build that will deliver to me or offer to me learning opportunities? So imagine a system a navigational system that is intelligent, that understands who I am, where I am, the situation and environment I'm in, and also who I'm with, to deliver learning opportunities, both personal and collaborative. And that's kind of the framework and vision for LEA, and that's the student cockpit. What we're trying to do, first off, it's still a hard problem, but we think an easier problem is, okay, so the faculty who are in a classroom also need some sort of navigational instrument to let them know how students in their class, this could be an online class or it could be an on-ground class, what kind of data and information about the student that I need so I can help them. All right, so imagine a faculty member with their dashboard or their navigational instrument. And first kind of listening is the set of courses that I'm teaching. A drill down would be, who are the students in my class? So this is essentially a CV chart and some set of attributes. Now, what we've done is highlighted some colors, green, yellow, and red. And that's supposed to be some indication of where the student, how the student is doing in the class. Green means we think our analytic engine has some predictive capabilities and intelligence saying these folks are doing okay. Bob Dylan is in a class from Duluth, and he's red. Okay, now this is, imagine we also want to build tools that are front to drive. So don't think of this clunky interface, but something like pre-deck, right? A fun, appealing interface. Okay, so now I drill down to Bob Dylan. Some set of information is sort of telling me basic profile information, but another panel on the column is past information about the past. So things that might be in the model. So the past, based on their past record and history, it's being highlighted as yellow. So there's some indication that coming into the class, their past performance, overall performance, as well as what they might have done in the course, is leads to a problem. That's why it's yellow. Same thing with present. How they're performing in the class, login activity, interaction, participation, frequency. These are possible signs of either trouble or success. And then another panel might be, here's some actions and interventions that I might be able to apply. Now, I'm not going to go through this. If the faculty member wants to drill deeper into why we think the predictive model is likely to cause problems or is anticipating or projecting problems, I can begin to do that. Okay, now, so I'm going to summarize here is the cockpit panel, the analytics, that is of real interest from a student perspective is the instrumentation, the data, the learning material that this analytic engine might be able to provide for me as I go on my journey. So I want to leave you that metaphor and dogmatic claim that analytics is going to be the key to liberating understanding.
Before we go, I want to ask if you peg it into the terminology, if you haven't, that's just an idea. How do you think academic staff are going to respond to this new world? And do you see any barriers to academics truly wanting to understand this level of detail about the learning outcome of their teaching or learning outcomes of their students?
I worry more about faculty because the paradigm that we have is we as faculty know best about what you need, right? So one of the concepts that we came across yesterday at the executive session was students more and more thinking of themselves as free learning agents. So that whole concept says, hey, I want to be in control of my learning. I want to be in control of my destiny. I want to decide who I want to interact with, what I want to learn, and that's an alien concept. So I think we're going to have difficulty in getting it out.
There may be some questions from the audience and the virtual world around this. Okay, Stephen Downs, our next speaker. Please welcome Stephen.
Hi, everyone. Joe Manning, inspired by Michael Wester's talk yesterday. So I'm busy loving the audience. I'm trying to think about how that can apply in a wider context, but that's okay. That'll come up as I'm going through this. I want to do a whole bunch of reframing. Let's begin with the beginning proposition of the topic of this entire discussion. We only exist because of the needs of students. And there's a whole bunch of ways in which that's not true. And let me examine that. First of all, education is, as we know, is a much larger enterprise. Education is an enterprise that you know very well, and I know very well, answers to a multitude of stakeholders. To the students. Education is a social enterprise. It is not simply the act of creating learning in the minds of students, but it's also the sort of thing that we as a society do collectively in order to propagate ourselves, to propagate our values, our knowledge, our beliefs, our way of life. So there's all of that that's coming into the picture. We also exist, and we may as well be honest about this, for our own needs. We are all in this discipline of learning, education, etc., for our own purposes. And our own purposes vary quite a lot. I'll bet if we went from person to person to person to person, we'd get, I don't know, 100, 200, 300, however many people there are, different answers as to why are you in this room? Why did you pick a career in education? You ask me, my answer would be, well, it was an accident. I trained as a philosopher, but I ended up in education purely by accident. And then you can trace it all from there. So there's all of that. And then also the whole question of existence. Existence isn't merely essence. Existence occurs in a context. We exist in a certain milieu, in a certain environment, in a certain society, with certain technology, with certain affordances, certain capacities. So all of these questions come into play. So as soon as we start messing around with the statement like, we exist, and then as soon as you start inviting a philosopher to talk about that, we need to pull ourselves out of this question a bit. So let's look at the other part of the statement. We only exist because of the needs of the students. Who do we need? I was once a member of the Board of Governors of the University of Alberta. Something they considered a hideous mistake, but that was the And they came back quite proudly, the university administration came back quite proudly with a survey showing that 90% of all the students were completely satisfied with the University of Alberta education. Top grades. Where did they take the survey, I inquired? At the graduation ceremony. We need, and the we here is the we, the individual, the we, the social being, the we, the educator, the we, the institution. We need to reframe the question of who are our students, who are our, quote unquote, customers. Do we include in that statement students, merely existing students, those people who were lucky enough and in a position to be able to pay tuition and spend years of their lives at our institution? Do we mean potential students, those people in high school who might have the grades and might have the drive and the motivation to go through? Do we mean dropouts? Do we mean the people in the street, the people working in the 7-Eleven, the people making crimes? I would contend, if we look at this from a broader context, and even an institutional context, we should be perceiving our mission not as providing education to these students, but rather to our society as a whole. Our institution, whether it's a college, a K-12 school, a university, corporate training, exists as part of an education infrastructure in the circuit society, and our customer, our student, is the entirety of the population of that society. And that changes, doesn't it, how we frame many of the questions. What do we know about the student's needs? Well, not the last class, How do we know what students need? We've got the wonderful quote from Russo, and we've got that quote from Russo. And I won't give the follow-up quote from Marx, that's okay. I'll turn instead to John Stuart Mill. John Stuart Mill, of course, advocated a philosophy of utilitarianism, and utilitarianism is essentially that an act is good if it promotes the general, or if it promotes good. And there's the general good, which is what Rousseau was about, and then there's the individual good, which is what Mill was about. And the question always comes up, how do you know what is good? And one way we hear this a lot is to ask and survey and all of that. But Mill says the best evidence that somebody desires something as a good is that they actually desire it. Which constitutes something that's almost radical, because it circumvents all the mechanisms, systems, and processes we have to tell people what is in fact good for them. My argument is that we should look to what it is students, that is to say the population as a whole, actually want to do by virtue of the evidence that they are actually attempting to do it. There are all kinds of ways of seeing what it is that they're attempting to do. Anytime they're trying to break one of our rules, they're attempting to do something. We have just found another definition of the good. What we want to do, I think, and what we need to do in this new environment where our students are the whole population, where good is defined by them doing what it is they perceive to be good, is to change what it is that we are doing. Education historically has been a service. And the question even is framed in that way. What should we do? Right? We only exist. We are the servers. We are the providers. And in a certain way, we are the deciders. But we need to change that around and change it from we provide an education, we provide learning, to education and learning is something that people provide for themselves. And there's a whole host of reasons why it needs to be that way. And the main reason why it needs to be that way is there's no other way to serve the entire population. If we become the providers, there's such an overhead and such a process and such a structure involved in that, that necessarily we can only serve one small segment of society, and then that segment becomes, well, we don't know, right? The segment who can pay, the segment that's smart enough, the segment that's lucky enough, the segment that lives here, as opposed to the sushi or somewhere. Also, we want to reframe this because we want to reframe how it is we approach the learner. We want to view the learner as somebody who is improving his or her capacities. And as they improve their capacities, they need to be able to improve their capacity to acquire their capacities. So, that was kind of a bad rephrase. You know where I'm going with that, but by being providers, we are, in a certain way, disempowerers. We set up an entire environment in which we created a condition of dependency. They depend on us for content. They depend on us for authority. And so our very effort to increase the power and self-reliance of our students is undercut by the process that we are doing, that we are engaging in order to increase the reliance, self-reliance of the student. I really don't say that much better than you. Okay. Challenges, like I love the tortoise in the hair, by the way, that's great. It's the rock assistant tortoise. But what was really exciting about that picture is it wasn't the rock assistant tortoise, it's the fact that the hare was asleep. The challenges being faced by the institutions are basically a fundamental redescription of the learning environment and the learners in general. People are now able to learn informally outside the institution and from many sources. it has been the case, in fact, for some time, that our educational institutions have been just one and an increasingly smaller part of the overall information consumption of students. And we can talk about whether there's a new generation, we can talk about whether it's a next generation, whether they think in new ways and all of that, but put that to one side for a second. What is indisputably true is they watch a lot of TV. What is indisputably true is they get a lot of other media, video games, movies. What is indisputably true is they spend a lot of time talking to each other. That's probably always been true. It's really true now. The influence of education is just a small part of that. There's this tendency for us to think of the education that students receive, by students who are not the whole population, as what it is that we provide, but that is not true. The education, big quotes, chapter letters, is the sum total of all the learning they get from all of these different sources, and we have to recognize that we're but one player, and we're an increasingly small role player, and as budgets get tighter, and as enrollments become more restricted, our capacity to actually be a part of their learning at all is minimized. And so we need to break out of that constraint, break out of the constraints of we offer learning at institutions in courses, and move out of the institution and into these other communities that they inhabit. And that's a very tricky thing. And it's not a simple thing. Because you know, we can't just set up a college president on Facebook. Anybody looks at that class, Facebook, college. So we have to be thinking of educational delivery to a community, but not even delivery, but rather being a resource, a support that is there. More like the good friend, the trusted advisor, the mentor, the person who has the answers to the questions, rather than the tour guide, the guy who tells you where to go, the prison board. So we need to be there wherever and whenever students need us and, critically, call for us. And we need to have the best information wherever it comes from, not just information from classes, from publishers, but wherever it comes from. And as Michael Wesch suggested yesterday, wherever it comes from is often from our own constituents, our own students. We need to work well with others, crucially with each other, which is always a challenge, but also with other institutions. And we need to keep adapting, keep making ourselves able to interface, interact, and contribute to not just the education of society, but to society as a whole. And I'm getting a signal that my time is up, and so I'm going to load the signal and retire from the recording. Thank you very much.
What I'll do is get the questions coming in. Thank you very much. Now, we have two mics either side of the room, so if you've got a question or if you need a comment about your experience with understanding student needs, please come to a microphone. But while people are thinking about whether they're going to approach microphones, we have some, we did have, hello? Back channel? Gone? No? Have we got questions back, please? Oh, well, while we're getting questions back, I'll ask a question. Is that what the moderator comes? Yeah, that's me. Who wants to answer the dilemma? We're talking about the experiences of students today, or how far back, you know, yesterday we were talking, some of us were talking with a researcher who's got details about K-12 students, year 3 students, and what they expect to see in our classrooms. How much should we be watching, how closely should we be watching what students are coming through education to say what they need when they get to a workplace by way of schools. Does that make sense?
Are you asking about me?
Anybody who wants to make some policy can vote.
But why would we be watching them in the classroom? And why would we be restricting our watching to the students in the classroom?
I mean, watching as in getting data, not what they need.
Yeah, but it seems like a very odd thing. It's just the question already contains a certain slicing and dicing and flaking and forming of it. And I want to look at it more widely. Yeah. What do students do when they're not in the classroom?
There's an interesting provocation about do we look at what's happening, you know, before they get to our level of, you know, your college or university. Should we be looking backwards? Or are we really trying to prepare people for jobs that don't really exist? How do we know what skills we need to be giving students to cope with jobs that don't really exist? Al, have you got a view on that?
No,
I'll pass.
Okay, we'll go back to some of the screening, the questions. How do we balance what students think they want versus what they really need? I think, Stephen, your answer was really around whatever they need is what they need, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that sounds too much like a philosopher's cop out, doesn't it? To exist is, by definition, to exist. What they need is what they need.
You can? Style metrics in virtual learning environments.
I think that's, I talk about building a learning engine or an analytic engine that takes as input where I am, the situation that I'm in, who I am, and who I'm with as the basis for presenting learning opportunities. So that engine, one of the it's really a model or a set of models that deliver that. And learning styles can and I think will be a key part of that model. There's lots of good research. We all know about this. So I think from an analytic standpoint, what a student's learn or a learner's learning style is or learning styles are is going to be a very, very important way of determining what somebody needs in a learning context.
That raises the question around, we've got a question. Microphone? Right.
Okay, yes. So I didn't want to interrupt.
Could you say who you are, where you're from?
Jeff Gordon from the University of Wisconsin.
Okay.
Each of the panelists spoke about the direction that learners are taking as far as the ownership of their own learning. And most of us here are working within institutions that are probably not going away anytime soon. So I'm wondering if anyone has seen examples of specific, you know, projects or actions that educational institutions have taken to promote that direction towards personal ownership of their own learning.
Scott, do you have
examples?
I think some of that is resources.
I spent 7 years at MIT, and it was many of the best faculty, their approach to learning, whether it was physics, in-depth physics, or general relativity, or even the humanities, the approach was not use a bunch of materials to learn it. It's, I'm going to present you a problem or a challenge. Here's some of the materials that I think are going to be useful to you. You figure it out, and come to me when you need help. Right? So I think that that's more of the style that we need to build our learning environments is you can determine what problems you want to solve, what you want to learn. Here's some useful materials that you might find useful or might be a utility for you. And here's some resources in terms of people. So I think it's not a great shift. I think the best teachers take that approach anyway.
Okay. I'm going to very briefly go back to what students need. That's okay. Because I'm not going to live there too long. But I want to change our way of asking the question because you know, when we're talking about the question, you know, what do students need, it's almost like we're thinking as a manager. If we only knew what we need, and what we need, we could provide it in one enough. And I want us to think about how we know, how we decide what it is that we need. And of course, there's a wide variety of things that influence that. So, and what we need has a lot to do with what we want to do, what problems we want to solve, whether they be how we get our next meal to how do we have a happy and fulfilling life, everything in between. So, and how many people decide what they want is based on the culture and the influences and the roles and the models in society. So, the concrete steps, three major things. First thing is that we need to be, we as educators, we as professionals, need to be the model and the demonstration of the sort of person we want our students to be. We need to conduct our work, conduct our profession in an open way, showing people what we do, how we think, the problems we face, the challenges we face, the values we have, and all of these things. So the stuff that we're doing here with the broadcasting of the conference, for example, the stuff that we do back in our institutions, whatever it is that we do, we need to make that open, and not just the learning professions, but also people in other professions. That's the first thing. And what that does is it sets expectations, it gives models, it provides potential wants, potential needs for students. It helps students organize what it is that they want to do in their lives. I want to be part of the next Apollo mission. I want to be part of the solution to the environment. These are so the second thing we need to do is provide the mechanisms and the resources and the content and the infrastructure that students can select at their own discretion in order to fulfill these hopes and dreams that they've acquired from the first part. So learning materials, software, open source, or whatever, the wide range of support and infrastructure, communication services, social networking, identity services, tools, infrastructure, content, knowledge, learning that they can pull from the ether. Al was talking about an analytical engine that will describe these things. We have analytical engines that come from human brains. They work really well, but they need to have this mechanism. They need to have the open environment from which they draw. And then the third part is from the educational system to move from being a segregated entity that exists in its own right to something that is embedded in all other aspects of society. We should find the education system in the courthouse, in the forest, in the grocery store, in the lawyer's office, wherever.
Given that if we take the premise that students are going to be self-directed, are we doing enough for educating tomorrow's teachers to deal with the paradigm when they are in the classroom and also to be able to recognize the learning that's happening outside the classroom?
So let me answer that in an indirect way. And I'm very practical and I like to think of examples. So let me first give an example of a problem type situation, not in a learning environment, which analytics can help with, and then you can think about how it might apply to the learning situation. So last week I was
in Edmonton, Alberta, with a number of colleagues, and we had to make a decision about where to go to for dinner. So I really could have used an application on my iPhone that says, okay, these four individuals, where they are, through GPS or whatever mechanisms, what situation are they in, and what environment are they in. So where are the restaurants in the vicinity, and what each of our preferences are, what food preferences are, and other types of things, and who I'm with. The decision is around with these four people, and so the application, the analytic application powered by analytics would have come back with a set of recommendations about which restaurants we might want to go to based on our preferences and styles, would have arranged for transportation, made a reservation, and all that stuff. So that's an example of using information about me to help me make some decisions. The analytic engine is not making those decisions, but it's providing me with the data and the pattern. Now, that way of thinking is not going to be easy to understand in the learning environment, because we still have faculty, many faculty, who think that, okay, if you want to go from point A to point B, I'm going to tell you what are the steps, what are the materials that you need to go from point A to point B. And that's just the wrong way to think about how we need to learn and how we need to learn.
I want to paraphrase Tom H's question about who decides, because I think that the issue of accreditation, certification, is going to be challenged in this environment. Terry Lynn, have you got any experience or views about what is the future for certification, prior learning, learning outside of the classroom? What's that going to do with the degree structure, degree or certification?
I think we need to look at different ways of assessing what competency means. So if we're looking at what does it mean to do something, then you'd be able to see that and enjoy a little bit of that versus having spent so many hours sitting in a classroom. And you know, if we're moving beyond having that need to sit in a classroom to show that I attended 30 hours and provide the credit, and looking at can you actually accomplish and deliver on what those effects might be.
Are there any questions from the audience? There's one? No? I think what we've done is teased a really broad topic with our panelists. I don't think we've reached any conclusions at all. What we've just done is open more questions as to the dilemma that we're facing about trying to be responsive to the needs of our students. I want to thank you very much for your attendance and your participation, also the people who have been doing so virtually. And I would like you to join me in thanking our panellists who have dealt with a very tricky sort of topic and have very much provoked a lot of thought, I think. I think the quietness is a reflection of the dilemma that we face with this sort of question about what do students need and how we're going to respond to it. So please thank the panelists.
Again, Sue, for moderating the panel. It was a great discussion. I'm sure it's going to spark a lot of conversations for the rest of the afternoon. And what we want to do next is give away some prizes. Is that okay? So, the first prizes that are up right now are the flight deck. I'm not sure if you know the flight deck, it's really an airplane. I'm not sure why I did that as a prize, but it is a prize. The winner is Carrie French. I'm not sure. Is Carrie here? Hopefully. Who walks 33 feet and 6 inches on her flight. So it's going to be a backpack or a nice little pack folio that you pick up at the reception. So all the prizes are the registration test. Second prize is going to be Mark Schellmer, senior. Yes, he's here. who's going to either a golf shirt or a water bottle? 31 feet and 11 inches for his flight. The third place member is Randy Pratt, who threw for 31 feet. And that's going to be a gizmo clock or a tackle or all those are at the registration desk. So the next challenge, and I can see around the room that we've taken to this challenge, is the centerpiece opportunity. So I'm going to invite Chris Thomas, who's participating on our judging panel, to come up to announce the winners. Thanks very much, Chris.
Hi. So I think I'll see that there are a lot of great creations you guys have all done up on your table. Unfortunately, we only picked two. There's supposed to be one, but we're pretty generous around here, so we decided to go for two. I'm going to start off with an honorable mention for Table 61, and that is for our youngest builder, and one of our attendees' sons, who's been here and building the center for community. He's also doing some plane vaulting.
Table
61, let's just sit back.
Wonderful to see everyone here again, and I look forward to seeing you tonight. Thanks very much, everybody.